Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Schaefer here.
And David Ponder.
Today, we are talking about a term that every time I hear this word, I think of the show Seinfeld because of George's dad screaming, "Serenity now!" Because we are talking about serenity.
Serenity.
Wait. And that's such a funny show overall, an episode, because of the contradictory nature of it. Of you wanting, you know, peace and quiet and serenity, and he's just screaming, "Serenity now!" But I think it captures how Americans probably think about serenity. I want it now!
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a very Eastern versus Western, you know, thing that we could talk about when it comes to serenity. With Western, you know, motivations being about never-ending growth. Never, you know, achievement. I think about the other Lebowski, the other Jeffrey Lebowski in the Lebowski, the old man, right? I have lived a life of competitors bested, achievements.
Yeah, you know. Yep.
And it's like, that's kind of like the Western philosophy about life. What is a good life, you know? And then on the flip side, Eastern philosophy and teaching of acceptance. And
to me, yeah, I think you nailed it. Eastern and Western people will approach serenity differently. And to me, maybe the Eastern approach feels better because it's, I don't know, more foreign to me, more exotic, different, perhaps. But I believe they treat it more as a process. We treat it as an outcome, a good, a thing that we want right. I need to enhance my peace right now, enhance my serenity. I'm only at a 7. I need to take it to a 10. Like,
it's just like it's just like growing the damn economy.
Right. You got your serenity metric.
Yeah, exactly. We got to report on our serenity. We got to grow that serenity. Yeah. That's exactly right. So I always do a definition. Let's do it. Let's start it off. This was just, I think, dictionary.com. The state of being calm, peaceful, and untroubled.
Yeah, I think, and I saw that too, and I like all three. Yeah. And to me, the first two make total sense. They're logical. I disagree with the third one. So that was the thought I put in when we were kind of looking up our notes. I don't think I couldn't disagree more with the dictionary's definition on that. I don't believe that people who are serene or experiencing that are untroubled. We're all troubled. I just think that they've been able to find ways and tools and develop a mindset so that their troubles don't trouble them.
No, I agree 100%. And so I think there's argument in the nuance of what that means.
Like, right.
If you don't recognize your troubles or you don't dwell on them, are you still troubled? Everyone's troubled.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I love that. And I would actually say, going back to the East versus West thing, if you think about the way that the Western mindset, growth, achievement, all that works, you have to actively be seeking out troubles. Problems that need fixed. How do you make progress? You have to solve problems.
Yeah, find a pain point.
Deficiencies, areas where we're lacking, you know, metrics that need to go up.
Yeah.
And then we need to take action to improve those things.
Interesting. And then you take that to the psychological realm and think about the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, and everything, how we approach psychology is just finding flaws and then working on those flaws. And then, because of this change, now this part of the system's messed up. We've got a label for that. The way we approach psychology as a species, the field of it, is not meant to lead to serenity. It can't.
You know, you said something to me that I don't know why, but it's stuck in my head. It comes back to me all the time whenever I'm feeling anxiety, whenever I'm the opposite of serene. And that was, whatever happens, that's exactly what was supposed to happen, right?
Yeah, at that moment.
Well, and I saw, I forget, I was reading something, and I think it was like an internet comment or something, where somebody said something that was like, basically saying, we can't accept that. Like, it was like, what are the harsh realities of life? And one of them was like, bad things will happen to you, and there's no justice or something like that, right? And I was just like, yeah, but accept that, man. Like, yeah, that's what, the sooner you can get over that, the better life you're going to have. And I think it also goes to something that I was going to say that we can talk about with serenity, right? So we talked about untroubled and how having troubles it's almost a choice. Like, it's a choice. It goes back to the old thing that I always bring up, which is anything's going to happen to you and you get to decide how you're going to react to it, right? But it's all about expectations.
Yeah. To me, a different way to think about it is that maybe people who are really experience peacefulness and can be more calm, maybe they're just better storytellers. Maybe they're able to tell themselves the story of that situation in a way that allows them to react more calmly rather than have their emotional reactions control them. Maybe they just can quit really quick in their head, tell a better story to orient themselves to whatever's occurring in the world. Or maybe they're just naturally inclined to be that way. But it goes along with what you're saying is we absolutely can control what we think and how we react. But that all comes from the story we're telling. So when you were saying earlier about those internet memes, I would just take it away and say bad things happen. Just accept that. I just remove bad and just say things happen. We're telling the story of why it's bad or good. We're putting our moral structure around it.
I agree 100%.
So just to me, shit happens, like the t-shirt.
We just talked about an example, a perfect example of that. And then it's all about the story. You could have two people that the same thing happens to, and one of them will tell one story about it and they'll be fine. And the other one will tell a different story about it and they will be in pain and agony. It's crazy. We were going to have our best year ever. We had the best year before that and the best year before that, and we were on track for that. And then this pandemic happened, and I'm just letting my team down, and I can't make things right. Yeah. I'm having anxiety. I can't sleep. You know, like, this damn pandemic is ruining my life.
Yeah.
You know, versus another one. Yeah, we were on track for our third best year ever. And then the pandemic happened, and, you know, obviously it's outside of our control. So instead, we've pivoted, and we've put our resources towards some really great philanthropic stuff. And I got to say, we're making a difference in the world in a way that I never realized we could. I feel really great about it.
Right. Yeah, and then the critics and the skeptics will be like, oh, it's just bullshit and this and that. It's like, well, what do you want? Do you want me to just wallow in a situation unfolding that it is negative? There's no way around it. It's not good. Or try to do something. Take that Western philosophy. But sometimes, can people get serenity by having the goal achievement philosophy of always wanting more, more, more?
Yes.
More?
Okay. I wanted to say that. Like, so that was something that in preparing for this episode that I saw and I agreed with. And it was like, look, let's ask the question. Can you let go of expectations and still have big dreams, still have big goals? Well, yeah. Of course you can, you know? Like, and when we talked about, if you go all the way back to our like, happiness episode, it was one of our first five episodes, I think. There are two really big points in there that I thought were very relevant for this. It was number one, bad things can happen to people, and it is about the story that they tell and how, like, research shows, like, the guy who was originally in the Beatles and got kicked out and missed all the fame and the fortune, if you talk to him about it, his story about it is it was the best thing that ever happened to him because he met his wife and his daughter, you know, or had met his wife and had his daughter, and that never would have happened, and his life is amazing as it is now, and, you know.
He wouldn't have had his kids.
Yeah. You know, and so, and study after study shows that a person who undergoes something that we would consider you know, really hard and bad and challenging, like losing their eyesight, and a person who gets something that's like really great, right? Like they win the lottery. About 3 months later, 3 to 6 months later, their happiness, they rate their happiness about the same. And it is all about that storytelling. And so, yes, I think that – so that's number one. I would say that if you go all the way back to the happiness episode and remember that point and say, can you let go of expectations and have big dreams? If you remember that you can handle anything and you will handle anything, you are resilient, then that allows you to understand, like, my expectations have such a – they don't have to follow this narrow path. I can set a dream, right? And I can set a goal and I can work toward it. But it's okay because I can handle the widest range of results. And if you just know that in your core, you're a much stronger person for that. That's number one. And number two, learning to make it not about the result but about the climb, right? I think what we said was knowing that this isn't it is it, right? Like, mm-hmm. Look, I will always try to improve myself, my life, and my situation. That will never stop. That is something that is innate in me. And that is why I love this life so much.
Nice. Nice, man. A lot said there, and I have to agree with all of it. Serenity, it would be tough for a lot of people to say, would you like serenity or not? No, I don't. Right? I think most people would have to answer yes to that, right?
Yeah, but it'd be funny to see how they say yes to it.
Right.
The tortured souls that we were just talking about would say, well, yeah, but only, you know, what's the cost of serenity? I got to give up my right. No, you know.
Yeah, so what I was thinking about is just the Western approach to even something like serenity. It's a scientific approach, and science values one thing, measurement and truth. So serenity for me, it can't be known. It's not a known thing. It's not a quantity to be captured and studied and measured and theorized about. It's something to be felt and experienced. And then we try to put it into words and we muddle through it like I'm doing now. But for me, serenity, when I'm in it, I don't want to write about it. I don't want to even explain what I'm feeling to people. I just want to be there because I know it's the right place to be in feeling this. And then I think we pervert it, but that's what we'd like to do in this society and explain it and analyze it. Let me write a treatise on it and let me do a podcast on it. And I like it because I want people to know it, but knowledge is not experience.
You're right. You are absolutely right. So when I think about it, I can think of a couple states that I hit, all of which are desirable, but then saying, well, which is serenity, right? And it's like you said, measuring this shit can become bullshit. It's
right. You wake up and look at your calendar. Okay, serenity. All right. I put in 10 minutes for my serenity exercise.
I remember when I was sick, they would come in and they'd be like, you rate your pain on a scale of 1 to 10. Yep. And I'd be like, what does that mean?
Right.
Right. Like, it's so relative.
Yeah.
You know, like, as compared to yesterday or as compared to every pain that I've felt in my life, like, what about good feeling? Is that on the scale?
Yeah.
So is a five baseline?
And more in statistics or when you're measuring anything, there's four key words as compared to what?
That's really good. And so I would say when we talk about serenity, there are a couple states that I can think of, right? And say, which of those do I want and which do I think is sustainable? So there is a state of Zen that you can reach. And I mean, I need to start writing down every time I have one of those states. It's where for some reason, and you don't, most of the time with no reason at all, in my opinion, at least in my experience, everything is okay. Everything is not okay. Everything is good. I wake up in the same bed I woke up in the day before. I go throughout my day in the same way that I did, and everything is right. I notice what's right with the world just naturally, and I feel, you know, this welling up sense of like, it's almost like you're high. It's almost like when you're on drugs, but you're not. You have an emotional high going on. Now, that And you, the way that you think about things is naturally the way that we, all these things that we say to remember, right? Like those are just the way that your thoughts are naturally aligning in that state, that Zen flow state. That's a fleeting state for me. I can't create it. It comes and it goes.
Dave, it's a fleeting state for everyone.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
We think that there's, you don't reach Maslow's top self-transcendence or self-actualization and just stay there. It's always fleeting. That's the point. The climb never ends.
Right. And well, and I don't even think that's a part of the climb. I just think that that's, it's, well, I guess when,
no,
you would
I
say it's enlightenment.
To fill
right?
your climb. Imagine you're climbing a mountain. You don't just climb Everest straight through.
True.
You get, and then you camp at a certain area, base camp, and then you stop and you look around.
Yes.
And you get your zen and your yes. serenity, and you're like, we're doing this.
Yes, this is awesome. Right?
If you just climbed the whole time, it'd be an awful experience.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a very good point. Yeah. So, but it's like you can't will that. You can't plan it. You can't be like, next Saturday, zen state. That's
right.
when I'm going to have that.
That's know? The experience part. It just
happens. It happens, and it's
but
awesome.
That's where... You know, I read this book by Anthony DeMello, a famous Jesuit priest, really spiritual guy, wrote a lot of books. This one's called Awareness. And it's on being spiritual, it's on being enlightened. And he defines spirituality as awake. Wake up. Life happens. Things are going to occur. And his whole point is what we're talking about. All this stuff is just a process, and things are as they are, and we think we can control them, and we can't, and we set our plans in motion, and they work a lot, and then we convince ourselves that, yeah, we do have a lot of control, and then something like this happens, and we see that, wow, nope, no, we don't. It's just powerful stuff, and his whole point is we look to people who are spiritually informed, or we might consider enlightened, wise people, truly wise people. And we're like, man, they've got it. And his point is, yeah, we might have it a little more than you, but it's because we know that it ain't something we put in our pocket. It's just a mindset. It's the way I approach my day. Do you still get depressed? People often ask this guy, do you still get down? He's like, yeah, but I'm not depressed. I feel depression, and then I will feel happiness again. How we talk about our things helps create that reality. If you put yourself as I am this, well then, okay, sure. You're telling yourself the story you are rather than I'm experiencing this. I'm having this thing happen right now. It's going to go away. I'm talking about feelings, not like illnesses or something. But anyway, so it was just like, bam, enlightened people don't walk around enlightened all the time, or maybe they do, but it's only because they realize I really have very limited control over things, and I'm okay with that. And again, this isn't like this was my ideas, folks. Anthony DeMello wrote this book, Awareness. And to be quite honest, I would not recommend it to the majority of our readers because it would smack most people too hard in the face and they'd put it down. Because he's just like, oh, I bet you go through your day like this. Oh, here's why you're wrong. You know, and he hits people hard with some truths that are uncomfortable. I love it.
So I was two things about that. Number one, and I wanted to put this off to talk about later, so let's revisit it. But that what you said at the end, like what he says there will smack people in the face, and most people can't handle it. I think that there's been some of that going on with this whole pandemic. I think people have gotten smacked in the face with the way they've been living their lives because it's all gotten ripped away from them and they've had time to think.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you get – it's like somebody throwing a bucket of water on you when you're asleep and you wake up and you go, oh my God, like reevaluate your priorities. And you go, holy shit, what have I been doing?
Yeah.
And that's just the way that the Western society, the economy driven life is consumer driven life. It's built for that. And I think a lot of people, now that it got taken away, that curtain all of a sudden got opened and they see the man pulling the strings and they're like, oh my God, what are we doing? So anyway, let's revisit that because that's not really core to what we're talking about here. It's just a side note. But what I think is a good trick that I've learned when you're talking about him and like being awake is we think about people like those who go through Navy SEALs training. And we look at people who have the ability to handle those situations, put themselves in very hard situations and handle them well. That's a positive thing. We think of that as great. We think of that as a strength. It's admirable. And yet, we never work to prepare ourselves for difficult situations. We never think about, could I handle that? If this bad thing happened, how gracefully would I operate in that situation? Would I accept it? Would I get through it well? How would I get through it? Would I immediately break down and ask for other people's help and support? Or would you, or could I hold it on my own?
I will disagree with you a little.
Okay.
I think as a whole, define who, when you say we don't do this, who are you talking about? Western society in general or?
Yeah.
The business community sure does. Hmm. All they do is contingency plan as much as their resources and capacity allows them to, but that's what business continuity planning is all about. Let's prepare for all this so if shit happens, we can emerge with serenity and some calmness as a business. Personally, I agree. Most people aren't thinking about that, but the Stoic philosophy for that journal we're filling out, one of the things that Marcus Aurelius did every day is he woke up in his first hour, or so he says from his writings, he spent thinking about all the horrible shit that is going to happen to him
today. Yeah, I love it.
All the people that are going to come to him and try to influence him and lie to him and persuade him and deceive him and betray him. And he goes through all of that, not to create a sense of bitterness, but to prepare to respond in a calm manner and to know that the world is as it is and I can just respond.
So I, again, agree and disagree with you. What Marcus Aurelius did is admirable, and it is the way that we, both personally and in business, should prepare.
Mm-hmm.
When you say businesses do contingency planning, I know what that's a part of.
Right,
I've been involved in that. It is, how do we get back to the way things were as quickly as possible?
Mm, gotcha.
It's business continuity, they call it, or resiliency. How do we bounce back? Not how do we learn to operate in a new normal.
Gotcha.
That is at a lower state.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that.
They never accept lower rates of growth. They never accept, you know, less profit. That's never part of the conversation. It's, okay, if I lose my – and let's just make a parallel to a person. I live in a $1 million house. I'm a very successful person. I've got a BMW. If something goes wrong and I go to financial ruin, how do I get back into a $1 million house and a BMW as quickly as possible?
Well, to me, it goes back to the TED Talk Lauren had us watch for her death over dinner, how the lady, the wife of the young guy that died from brain cancer, described resiliency. Resiliency isn't about bouncing back fast to where you were. It's about bouncing forward to where you need to be.
That is perfect.
She didn't complete the thought. I added the second place piece. But I've really switched with resiliency, especially with the pandemic, thinking about, okay, I don't need to bounce back to where things were prior with my business. This is just, it is what it is. I just need to bounce to where I need to bounce to and be open and okay with that.
100%.
And some bounces are easier than to others to grapple with, especially when you're in our prime earning years and your late 30s and you got two little kids and you got this and that and you're trying to prove yourself and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. It's like, God. That is it's a superpower. It is an unrecognized superpower. Someone who could say, yeah, I am successful, and yes, I do have these nice things. But if I woke up tomorrow and I was in financial ruin and I had to go drive a, you know, 15-year-old beater that, you know, like, I could handle it.
But that's because that person has not attached themselves to their things. That's serenity. That's the process. That's why they can do it. Because, yeah, do the things bring them joy? Of course they do. And you should enjoy nice things because that is other humans' creativity and innovation and their design abilities going into a well-made product. Like, that's a cool thing. To me, that's a celebration of human flourishing. There's tons of shit, too, that you shouldn't enjoy. But if you put your happiness – and that's another point this Anthony DeMello makes. If you're putting your happiness in – things, but here's where he really slaps people in the face, is in other people. If other people, you're relying on other people for your happiness, then fuck you, basically. Like, that's your fault.
Yeah, because I was going to say, things are one part of the equation. The other part of the equation is recognition.
Recognition from other people.
Yeah, because as much as you love your big house and your BMW, you don't really love it.
They need to respect me.
You love that other people have, you know,
right,
see you in a certain light because of those things.
Right. Yeah, no. That's good stuff, man. So what do you do for serenity? How do you, if you're trying to cultivate it, You said you, oh, I should write these things down when I'm in these states of Zen. Of course you can't in the moment. Can you think of anything that maybe if you get into doing an activity or something where you might feel that serenity?
That one, well, it doesn't help me feel that serenity. God, I don't know what that is, where I, something that puts me into that Zen flow state. If I can figure that out, oh my gosh.
I have one that I know, but I can't.
Well, let me tell you mine.
Yeah, and then, and sorry. I thought you were saying you didn't have one. Sorry.
Mine is coping with the opposite. Hmm. Mine is when something that I'm perceiving as bad is happening to me.
Hmm.
And I always think about, no matter how bad something is, I can always make it worse. Right? Yeah. And so I do the worst case scenario exercise. And I go, what's the worst thing? What's the worst scenario that this could, you know, if I take this 10 times what it is now, how bad is that? And could I get through that? And I always am like, yeah, I could get through it.
Nice.
I know I could. And then I'm like, well, shit, this ain't that bad. Because this is only one,
right?
You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden that makes me feel a lot better.
Nice.
So that's
the, no, that's good.
Yeah. So what about you on the good side?
And I apologize. I thought you were saying you didn't have one. No. I didn't mean to cut you off.
How do you cultivate the good side?
And again, it I can only set myself up. I'm aware of certain conditions that lead my brain to be operating in a way that I really enjoy and feel good about. But I can't force it. But I can help curate the conditions that allow it to get there. And that's in awesome, deep conversation with good friends. That's why I like to entertain and get people over and get the gathering going and set the phone down and just get into conversations and let them go where they are or where they go. Because I'm in the zen. I'm in the zone. I'm not paying attention to time. It either flies by or it goes slow. Time becomes relative. And anytime for me when time becomes relative, then I know I'm feeling serenity. And I might not know it in the moment. Or if I do, then I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. Just get back in it and then journal about it. So for me, it's that conversation.
Yeah. So I agree. 100%.
Like this.
Yeah.
These life labs, and it takes a little bit, but like right now, dude, I'm experiencing serenity.
Me too.
Like it's, I feel good. I feel positive emotion. Peace, calm. Are there troubles awaiting? Sure, but that's okay.
It's so funny how I leave every one of these in a state of like, somewhat peacefulness, more than baseline.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And then it's just it's crazy how you get back into it and it melts away over time. You know what I mean?
But even think about how we describe it. You know, I leave this and I've got some peacefulness greater than baseline. You know, the benchmark has been achieved. I'm two standard deviations ahead. Like that's just our mentality.
That's the way we think.
So what is their serenity metric?
Yeah,
you know, but that's okay. Like some people. Okay,
well, and I also like as you're going through it, I'm like, okay, that's true, right? When I am making a connection with another person, things seem to melt away, right? So why am I experiencing a greater sense of peace when I'm in connection with another person, a deep conversation about something? And it's because all those things that you measure yourself against them don't matter in that moment. All the troubles that you – the thing that you're worrying about that you have to, you know, get done in the next period of time, the things that you've – those all seem to disappear in those moments of connection with someone. And the only thing that matters is the connection you have with that other person or yeah. The other people.
I think that's right. I would say I know a spot where you're in serenity. You might not describe it as serenity like normally, but if we look at the definition of calm, peaceful, and untroubled, I absolutely know one when you're in it. When you are getting to analyze and try to solve a complex problem,
yeah,
whether it's on the computer screen or at a whiteboard when we were doing our coaching, we'd throw a big business problem up that you're experiencing that you got to figure out. And dude, you just dive into it and you get into it. And I got to watch you.
I love it.
And you absolutely are untroubled, calm, at peace. Like, so to me, analysis can absolutely help people create serenity. Of course it does. That's why our tech companies are some the most profitable in the world. Clearly those people, if doing in-depth analysis didn't bring serenity to groups of people, I don't think tech companies would be the most profitable enterprises in the world.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because there was really you know, in my career of being in technology, we talk about, oh, coding and this and that. There was really only one period in my career where that's all I did all day was work in code, you know, and that was about a period of 2 years. And it's funny what you say, because I remember that time as me being in that state a lot more than I am now. And it's funny to talk about how, okay, well then why don't you go back to that, right? Well, because priorities, man. Like, yeah, I gotta move on. I gotta have progress. I don't want to be some low level coder, you know. Like, but you're like, but yeah. But we also talk about how life is just emotion, and if you're always having positive emotion in that time, you know what I mean.
Here's two things I'll say about this. I like it. It's about choices too, with serenity. Now we might not be able to just give me serenity now. We can't do that, most likely, but we can have choices if we're aware and woke up a bit about what conditions might lead us to serenity. Well, then you can try to create the conditions that lead you there. And our environment has a lot to do with that. Two stories. One of our friends got out of college, and one of his first jobs was downtown St. Louis in the cubicle mazes, and, you know, making decent money. Walked in, they took him to his cube. He said, I don't even think he made it one whole day. And then he got up and quit. And that was Jay. Jay did that because he knew himself. He's just like, this is my hell. I don't care how much they're going to pay me. I'm not living this life. And he made that decision as a 22-year-old. The second one is Kizzy's cousin, the guy that he's an interior architect by trade, owns his own construction company. He did our kitchen. So I was just talking to him, you know, so you're not an architect anymore, work at a firm. He's like, nah, I got out and worked at a good firm. We worked for Anheuser-Busch and did big projects. And he's like, I just couldn't do that office stuff, man. I wanted to build my ideas. And so he left that, which of course is more reputation and status, to do his own thing. And now he's going to retire at 52. You know, now he works really, really hard and he works another job at night. But my point is, you can be aware of the conditions that create your serenity, but you can't create your serenity, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And what if he never got to retire?
I think he probably would have lived a
better life, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. One path, he would have retired at 40.
Right.
The other path, he has to work till he dies.
Yeah.
But does it matter if that's what he loves?
Yeah, and he's... Yeah, I'm always jealous of people that can build. And I think, you know, with your coders, you're building all kinds of useful applications and software programs that make an impact for people. But like builders, like houses and fences and things, furniture, there's just something to that. Like, you've created something from nothing. And that's exciting to me because I'm not good at it.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's that thing. It's that progress, creativity. You know, there's something that I think is a big piece of serenity that everyone says, everyone talks about it. And we do these, what are you grateful for? Oh, I'm grateful for, and then we make something up, right? But really, there's a difference between saying you're grateful for something, thinking of something and being like, yeah, I'm grateful for that, and actually feeling a sense of gratefulness for something, you know? And when we talk about reaching Zen flow state and all these things as a part of serenity, I think that's like top level serenity. Everyone wants to get there, right? But there's also this level of serenity that is just being okay with stuff. Like, and there are people who are just generally content people. I've seen people who I've admired because they're in situations that I'm like, that's less desirable than the situation I'm in as far as career and things like that. But they're just like, they're just happy people. You know what I mean? They're content.
They're easy to be around.
They're easy to be around. They seem to be, you know.
One of the most powerful sayings and prayers that has gotten me through some dark days is the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That, I don't know if there is more powerful human advice ever given. Shit's going to happen that's out of our control. Help me understand that it's out of my control. Give me the courage to step up and do the things I need to do and can't take control. And help me understand the difference. And your God can be whatever. A religious God, a spirit, the universe. It can be math. It can be talking to two other people. That's a higher power.
But like, you gotta give in to something to get this, because you can't control it all.
I agree. And that gratefulness is part of that.
Oh, 100%.
It's so funny.
But it goes back to what we were talking about before. Now I'm going to write down a note. Listing versus feeling.
Yeah.
So I do the gratefulness stuff, and because I'm not good at being in the moment. So I keep an active list every night. I jot those things down and I list them all out. But I need to work more on the feeling in the moment. And the only time I do that is when we have dinner as a family and actually sit down together, which we've done a ton of during the pandemic, which has been great. We don't pray, but we do great for what we're grateful for. And in those moments, you really say it with feeling and you feel it. And our 7-year-old doesn't let us get a dinner going without bringing that up, which is awesome. So she's already trained on that. But your point about, well, feeling grateful versus just saying I'm grateful. Now this has become, it's like name dropping in leadership circles. And what are you grateful for? What are you reading? And what are you grateful for? Right. And it's just like, okay, all right.
All right.
That's a hollow question.
Yeah. It's become fake. Yeah. When we're talking about being grateful, as I was preparing for this, there were some things that it's like, okay, when you're talking about being grateful, these are some things that help cultivate serenity, and gratefulness is kind of the core of those things. So you talked about creating, right? So if you want to be an artist, or I would even extrapolate that, you want to be a creator. Look at what you're creating right now. Feel grateful for the inspiration that pours through you, right? I think part of gratefulness is also a sense of wonder, something that is at its core. You know, we always are able, one of the things that helps me lose myself and my troubles melt away, and I get to do it very infrequently because we live here in the city, is looking at the stars and realizing how insignificant not only our life is, but everyone on this tiny little speck of a grain of sand planet in the universe, right? So that's one thing. Another thing, wonder, that because it's wonder, because it's like, wow, what is this? And then what the hell is inspiration? How do ideas come to me? Because they do. They just come from somewhere, you know, to all of us. Like, is our consciousness just some antenna receiver? You get what I'm saying. Wonder.
Yeah.
That allows gratefulness.
That's cool.
So that's one. If you want to find love, then look at the love you already have in your life, right? It might not be everything that you're hoping for, but that doesn't mean that it's not what something that's important, something that's great, something that's meaningful, right? Look at the people that you love and that love you. If you want more money, why don't you start to think about the things that you're already taking for granted, right? You were born in a country, a first world country, where all of your basic needs are taken care of, you know, for the most part. There are, right. It's all that, what are you comparing against?
Yeah. As compared to what? Those four words.
And think about how much of our spending is just mindless spending, and we don't even feel the abundance that comes with that. You know, we just are able to.
I'll tell you, I fall in that trap.
Yeah.
Man, with Amazon, I'll just be on there and be like, oh, yeah, I'll buy this. I'll just get this. Oh, how much? This is less than $20. Yeah, no brainer.
Yep.
You know, small and get hit. This plastic crap that I don't need. And in my head, it's just like, oh, it'll fill this need and it's this and that. And it's like, what are you doing, man?
I know.
It's dumb.
I know. But you get the small, like, emotional hit. You're like, I know it's fleeting. Throughout my life, I've learned it's fleeting, but so is every drug.
Let me ask you this, getting back to analysis and serenity. And I want your opinion because you're analytical. Serenity on a whiteboard, serenity, and then intellect. Tell me how those two things interact for you on the whiteboard.
I don't think there's cause there. I think there can be correlations, but I think it goes both ways. So I think that the story that we want to tell ourselves is, man, it would be great if I was just blissfully ignorant. We always say that term, right? Blissful ignorance. Because if I just didn't know, then I could live my life in peace. It's like the scene. It's like in the Matrix. But when you're taking, am I going to take the red pill or the blue pill? One pill, I am able to remain blissfully ignorant, but I continue to live, you know, this life of unknown bondage. Or do I want the intellectual route? where I'm now aware, but it causes me pain, right? Mm-hmm. I think that that's one story, but I think there's even, what about this other level? Like, what about if you can use your intellect to know that, all those things, and even go a step further and incorporate some of that Eastern philosophy and accept it, right? So you don't have to be ignorant to be blissful, is what I'm saying.
Right.
You can be aware and blissful. And ooh, I think I like that's that. The
that's
ultimate.
Good. That's a very higher level state approach. I like that. Yeah, I don't think that you can have one without the other, so to speak. Or like, I do think you can have both. But I think as soon as you start to apply your intellect to serenity and how to try to carve it out more, it makes serenity more fleeting. And that's what people try to do with drugs or a relationship that they're too dependent on or whatever story or version of themselves they're relying too much on to try to get that feeling of calm and peacefulness. It's going to make it more elusive. To me, you mentioned the ignorance is bliss. This is something I was talking with Gary about this week. I've just been reading a ton more about macroeconomics as tied to our economy, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, there's this really famous grievance model called Kubler-Ross that everybody experiences when someone dies, and there's five stages. It's like denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And you go through them not in a linear order. You bounce all around, but you hit them all if you lose someone you love. And I was like, there's got to be the same type of process for grieving your loss of ignorance about something. If that loss is something that you now realize and you're woke on it and you don't like it because it's just a nasty, dirty truth, that's how I feel about macroeconomics. Now I'm like, man, I can't not know these things and I don't like it. And I'm going through this damn process of grieving about the loss of my ignorance around it. I haven't looked into if people have written about it, and I'm not going to, but it ties into the serenity. Like, I've lost a little bit of serenity that maybe came from that. So I need to work towards what you're saying. I can be ignorant or not be ignorant, be informed and still blissful. Well, I'm not quite there yet on this specific topic.
Everything's about stories.
Yeah.
And think about the story that I think runs most parallel to what we're talking about. It's the story of Adam and Eve and when they ate the forbidden fruit. They ate from the tree of knowledge, right? They were blissfully ignorant,
yeah,
innocent beings, and then they ate from the tree of knowledge, and now they know, and now everything's tainted.
Well, as I forget which famous author, I'm sure many, probably Mark Twain, among others, have said, the problem with being such a reasonable animal is that we can come up with a reasonably well-informed reason for anything we want to do.
I love that. That's a
good
quote.
It's something like that. But it's true. Like, and that's why when I think of serenity versus intellect, I don't want to overanalyze something like that. I just want to feel it. To me, it's about thinking and analysis and knowing epistemology versus feeling and experiencing. I'm always going to fall down on the experiencing and feeling side because that's how I'm hardwired. But, you know, I've also had to make life changes when whatever I'm going after, my feeling and experience I'm going after, starts to cause other problems for me. Well, then it's time to do some analysis there and hopefully make good behavior changes.
You know what I think is an interesting part of where I can talk about this being applied, right? This, what about blissful ignorance and how you manage your knowledge and loss of that ignorance and the potentially negative emotion that you feel with it, that Kubler-Ross thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so I've come to handle it fairly well for myself, I believe. I mean, I still have difficulties, as everyone does. But where I've found extreme challenge with it at this point in my life is with my children. Is when I see that my children have an innocent understanding of something. And it is my job to teach them and give them knowledge. But ultimately, I know that will take that away from them.
Yeah.
And that is a hard one to deal with. Do I take their serenity in this moment, right? Because the way that they understand it isn't a full understanding and cause trouble in their little innocent mind. Do I do that? Because I know that ultimately in the long run, that will make them a better person. They're going to learn it sooner or later. They're going to have to go through this pain, this Kubler-Ross moment of loss, right?
Yeah.
At some point in their life. Is it beneficial?
I like it. Let's make it concrete.
Yeah.
When do you tell them there's no Santa Claus? right? This is yeah. As concrete as it gets.
I haven't yet.
Well, of course not. No.
I mean,
I'm not saying give us, teach us, but that's a great example of like lots of parents, right? I'm telling them as soon as early on, I don't want them to grow up with some. Okay, well, and the flip side of that is you're absolutely taking away that energy and excitement and awe and discovery and magic and innocence.
Yeah, yeah.
But people don't want to think about that when they're taking it away.
Yeah.
So there's no good or.
There, I don't think
time, I think there are better and worse ways to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's less about time, and it's not not about time. It definitely there is an element of timing to that that is important, but I also think the way in which you do it is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think no matter how well you do it, if your kid's 12 years old and they know there's no Santa and you come to them, they're going to, yeah, no shit, Dad. Like, why didn't you tell me this years ago? Why have I had to play this game mm-hmm. for the past 3 years where we act like it's real and I know that you're lying to me? There's no good way to do it at that point in time. Your window is gone. But so timing has something to do with it. But on the flip side, I've seen these ways to do that where you can still cultivate and you can say, look, you know, I saw the one that was like, now you can become a Santa.
Right, exactly. That's a cool one.
Cool one. But I think the core there is to say, look, the story as you have been told it isn't true. However, and I think this is where the key is. When we're talking about like Adam and Eve, which that's a story I don't believe, but I believe the core elements of it are true, right? So I think to be able to convert that knowledge to your kids to say the story as you've been told it isn't true. However, the core elements that make that story, magic, wonder, giving, those things are true. Those are true elements that are embodied in that story, right? So now that you know that that story isn't true, doesn't mean that those things are not real. They are. And so how do we explore keeping that in this season? You know, something like that.
I think what parents fail to remember is the power of peers. Their friends are going to help them figure that shit out way, way quicker. And sure, you can have an influence and cultivate whatever you want. And I'm going to do, I know that story and we'll try to do the same thing. But I just, again, to me, it goes back to that control of like, oh, I need to control everything. It's like, nah, man, like other kids are going to know, older kids are going to say something, then they'll come to you. So just be prepared how you'll respond when they come to you with something is how I'm thinking about it.
I think this goes back to what we were talking about with like, do you shy away from challenge or do you welcome it? Do you do the exercise I was talking about where you go, what could go wrong and how would I handle it? You know, like, could I get through it? And just knowing, and it's not even about planning for like, this is the process that I would use to get through it. No, it's not about that. It's just knowing that no matter what happens, I would get through it, you know? And then that allows you to not delay things that seem to be uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Like, let's just get it over with. I know I can handle it. And that comes to all of these things. It comes to, like, gosh, what about learning something that I don't want to know? So many people will intentionally ignore or avoid situations just so that they don't learn something they don't want to know.
Preserve their belief systems.
Well, and they are like, well, I'll be serene in that way. I'll be that blissful ignorance. Like,
it's preserving their story they've told themselves about themselves.
Yeah.
And how they're viewed. And to me, that ties back to all the choices we've made. If you think of yourself, your life as a story, you're a character in it. Hopefully you're the lead character. But your character's made all kinds of decisions. So then when that character bumps into something that might throw into question a whole series of life's decisions you've made, you know, that can be tough to want to grapple with.
Oh, that can be very tough. Admitting you're wrong. Can I admit that I was wrong? Yeah. And not only
and, that, and try to find, if we're talking about serenity, and try to find serenity in that.
Yes. Well, I'll say this. I'll boil everything that I think we've been talking about for at least the last 10 minutes down to what I think I'm taking out of this. And it is that you know, seeking out the reality that you want versus accepting the reality that is a big part of serenity. Some people think that to be serene, they have to seek out the reality that they want. And it's actually exactly the opposite. It's to accept the reality that is.
The other thing is the Western approach is, again, they believe that serenity, and myself to some degree, but again, I think I've become aware and have done enough practices to try to move away from this, or at least recognize it, is that serenity is not some destination. It's not a mountaintop in India or Nepal. It's not talking to the Buddhist guru down the street. It's not doing any of those things. It's in the process. It's in the journey of enlightenment, of trying to improve and feel good and do good and share good with other people. And that, when you realize that and you're able to cultivate that a little more, just appreciating what's happening, how it's unfolding, how you want to respond to what's unfolding, that's when you're awake. That's when you're aware. And that's probably when you have some serenity. But if you keep putting it, I need to take one more trip over to this area to try to find it. This one vacation is going to restore my serenity. That's another thing we haven't talked about, is vacations. Well, let's work ourselves to the bone, not spend time with the things we truly value, but let me get my vacation. I got my 1 week or 2 week vacation. Let me refill my serenity bucket and then go dump it back out.
That is a hilarious notion.
It's so fucking stupid.
It's one of those things that we pretend.
It's so ridiculous how people think. That's why I like to do these little mini hop and like do little things all the time. It's weird to me why people building up to that big vacation, Bob.
I love the things that we pretend and calling them out. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many of them. I think one of the things that, just being in business now in this time, it's just always been this pretend thing that, well, we have to go commute and we have to all go into this office and we all have to sit in these cubicles. And, you know, if you don't do that, I mean, there's that's the secret to productivity. Everyone knows. That
George Costanza knew it. You just park your car there and the boss thinks you got there early and stayed late. Oh, he's got to be productive. George, he's a hard worker.
That's exactly it. And so there are these things that we pretend, right? And it's like vacation. You have to have that break, that trip. You got to go somewhere and refill your bucket. You said it perfectly because that's exactly the language that they'll use.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
I guarantee there's a vacation. The vacation coach. We don't know how to take vacations. Now hire the vacation coach to teach you how to do your vacation right.
Yeah. Oh, did you refill your serenity? You're back. It's Monday after the vacation. I hope you got that serenity bucket up, because guess what?
You're about to fucking dump it out. you're going to trip into the office through the threshold and dump that serenity everywhere.
Those 2 weeks, they're gone. You're going to hate the next 11 and a half months of your life.
Oh, God, how we think about. So when I used to be a bit more combative talking to people and we'd get on any subject, there's really three key questions that you can ask any human. And I'm sure we've talked about them in past episodes, but not lately. And how they answer these things will really color a lot about probably a lot of their value systems. And that's, where do you live? Right? Where do you send your kids to school? And where do you vacation and how often? When people answer those three things, I guarantee you can find all other sorts of positive correlations. No matter what they're telling you about things, how they answer those questions, actually it's technically four, you learn a lot. And I've found that people who are able to vacation more frequently, who have wealth, as I define that, discretionary use of your time on planet Earth, I don't care how much money you have, if you control your time and how you spent it on this planet, you are wealthy. So if you can do that and cultivate opportunities where you're not feeling rushed or controlled by society, which is what a vacation is, you just enjoy it peacefully at a different pace, then you're good. You probably have more serenity. Now, of course, there's outliers, people who hit the birth lottery and were born into a super wealthy family and never had to work, so all they get to do is vacation. But that's different then, because they don't have to work. There's no need. Interesting stuff. Serenity. My serenity bucket. I gotta make sure I don't dump it out.
Okay. And that's just a symptom of – it's like – you know what that's like? I like doing analogies. That's like a pharmaceutical drug when you're not living a healthy lifestyle, right? The vacation is the pill, right? Yeah. So where if you'd really just lived a good lifestyle where the way that you spent your time was in line with your true priorities and the things that you would prefer your life to be like, then a vacation is not a necessary drug that you need to take, because you're integrating that in with your life throughout the year. You're achieving serenity in many ways throughout your day, week, month, not just oh, I got to take this vacation pill, this 2 weeks where I get to forget the fact that I hate my job. Mm-hmm. I hate my, what my day looks like is awful.
That's choosing to go to sleep.
Yeah. It's like medicating. It's like eating a terrible diet, having diabetes and hypertension, and then taking all the diabetes and blood pressure drugs.
And not changing anything.
Yeah.
Two words cut through all this, though, and it cuts through everything we talk about, and it's from Socrates. Know thyself. You got to just know yourself. And sometimes that's really uncomfortable for people to do. But I don't think you can't be able to cultivate the conditions to get to serenity, because you can't control serenity. But you can't get to where you can better set up those conditions unless you really know yourself and are comfortable with that. So like me, when I go on vacation, I know that is oftentimes when my creative juices explode. And so I know that I have to do a little bit of work each, or what somebody else might classify as work. When I'm doing it, it doesn't feel like that. And I get up early and I do it out of sight, out of mind. So other people aren't like, oh, don't ruin our time, because yeah. I get that. If I don't do those things, then I already know I'm in my head, not in the moment, enjoying it, because I'm in my head, oh, I should have done this, this, and that. So you just got to know yourself and not worry about what society says. Oh, when you're on vacation, you need to do X, Y, and Z and disconnect and do all. No, I'm on a vacation how I want a vacation, as long as I enjoy it. That's the point of it. And create off, because you're on a vacation, you're doing two things. You're actually trying to talk to both selves, because you're not one person, you're two. You're your experiencing self in the moment, trying to feel serenity, but then you're also trying to craft and cultivate a memory of that for your remembering self in the future. And so you've got to be able to facilitate back and forth between those, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just, it's a question of how aligned is your normal life with the life that you would want to live. And if it's very aligned, then when you're on vacation, it's going to be quite similar. Even though it's, you know, it's a vacation.
Nice.
Anyway.
What else you got?
I think I'm ready to wrap it up.
Cool, man.
Yeah, I would say, like, as far as a change challenge goes, I think I've got one.
Well, yeah, say yours, because I already wrote down a few. You already said some good ones too. But give us another one.
I'll just put it into exercise form, and that is I'd say start with fears. What are the things that you're afraid of? What are the things that you're afraid of failing at? What are the things that you are afraid of having to endure? What are the expectations that you want met, and what would happen if they are not met? All right, and build a picture of a couple of those, and then ask yourself, if those went wrong, how well could I get through it mentally and emotionally, right? I'm not saying, like I said, it's not creating a plan. Well, I would do this and this and this to get right back where I am and then achieve it. No. What if you had to accept that new reality where, you know, that is now your life? Get yourself comfortable with that. And if you, it's like what now disgraced comedian Louis C.K. said, right? Like, if you can just control your expectations, you can become invincible.
Nice. Awesome. So get that for Dave. I jotted down a few other things he said earlier that can help. Again, it's not going to lead to serenity. It's not causing it, but it's those conditions. I like to think about causes and conditions. Look at the stars more often. Star therapy. A sense of wonder allows gratefulness. So try to expose yourself to senses of wonder and discovery. However you do that, whatever. If it's science, great. If it's NASCAR, great. Like, just find your sense of wonder. Look and take stock of the love you already have in your life, I think is a huge one. And then mine's a four-step process, and I'll repeat it so you can get it. But it comes from that book, and it's all about serenity. It's what he would call spirituality or awareness or being awake. But it's four simple steps. Be aware of your negative feelings. One, be aware of your negative feelings. Two, understand that that feeling is in you, not in reality. It is not out in the world. It is literally inside of your head, your brain. You are making up and choosing to hold on to that negative feeling. Three, never identify with that feeling. Treat it like a thing. Talk about it differently. Think about it differently inside your head. Do not make that I am like that. Nope. It's in me. I'm experiencing. I'm feeling this. Then the fourth, you change to what you want to see. So when you change, everything changes. right? We want to change everybody else and change the world and change these processes. Nope. When you change you and your mindset and how you're bumping into your feelings, then everything else changes.
Your eyes are as much projectors as they are receivers.
Yeah. So again, just think about your negative feelings. Know they're in you. They're not in the world. Never identify with it, but it's okay to have them. And then try to change that feeling. Try to change your reaction to it.
I love it.
Close this out, buddy.
All right. So with that, I'll say, take the things that we talked about today. I know I'm going to leave here with this sense of serenity, right? But I would say, like, you got to remind yourselves of these things. You got to weave it into your daily life. All the change challenges and everything that we do are important, but finding a way to keep things sustainable and constant is the trick. I think that's the big trick when it comes to something like serenity. So just remembering the core principles that Zach went through and trying to keep them present and trying to be mindful of them. And so with that said, I hope everyone who listened to this goes out and has a very serene day. And as we always say at the end of Life Lab, experiment with life.